Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast. Here we explore spiritual insights and practical strategies to help you cultivate a family life rooted in beautiful, self-giving love. Join us as we invite experts to share uplifting perspectives and actionable advice for navigating the joys and challenges of modern family dynamics. Welcome back to the Ferris Love Podcast. I'm your host, Mary Grace Warner, and today we're going to take a look back on some of our favorite conversations with guests from the past two seasons. These episodes actually are some of our most downloaded episodes, and they offer a lot of different insights from creating a bright and cheerful home to really establishing good, strong relationships with your family members and your spouse. So whether you're a longtime listener or joining us for the first time, this episode, we'll take a look back at those conversations, and we encourage you to listen to the full episode linked in our show notes. One of our most popular episodes was a conversation that I had with Dr. Bob Schutz about antidotes to resentment and solutions for healing. This conversation was very profound, as well as insightful, because it gave light to a lot of issues and problems that married couples can face, especially in regards to having resentments towards each other and learning how to forgive. And so the following clip is just a brief discussion about how we can forgive others, especially our spouse, when it's hard. And Dr. Bob gives just some great reasons and some great insights and suggestions on how to go about doing that when it is difficult.
In discussing, you had mentioned, you know, sometimes it builds up and that's where you get the resentment from. How do you recommend someone, like, what would you suggest for someone who struggles with forgiveness? Like, it's not something that comes to them easily, and like you, and where do they begin, I guess, in that sense?
Yeah. In our conferences and a lot of our books, the books we've written, and go through a process of forgiveness. And so I think it's really important. So many times we think somebody says, forgive me, and we say, I forgive you, and we don't deal with the issue underneath it. And so I think the first step is us with God, and that we can, in a safe way, just begin. You know, one of the exercises we do in our conferences is in envisioning the person in front of you that's hurt you, and allowing yourself just to feel whatever you feel, whether it's fear or anger or sorrow or hurt or whatever that is. And then in your imagination, is before you have any interaction with the person, in your imagination, in the presence of God, you just begin to express, I feel angry. I feel really hurt. You did this to me. What you did hurt me. I felt ridiculed. I felt not seen, not heard, whatever that might be. I felt betrayed. And just the freedom to be able to express it in a safe way without the other person's reaction. And then recognizing how we've internalized that hurt, how we've taken that in to our own identity. Like, I feel unloved. I feel uncared about. I feel like less than in your eyes, or I feel not cared for, not considered, or feel betrayed, whatever that might be. And then bring that into prayer, asking God to speak the truth of who we are in those places. And then facing the judgments we've made towards the other person. Almost always when there's unforgiveness, we hold on to these judgments made out of pride, rather than judgments of the truth. It's judgments made out of pride. And to be able to acknowledge those and release those and bless the person who's hurt us, and then bring that person to the cross, you know, that we can both stand as sinners before the cross, and asking Jesus to forgive me for my judgments, for my resentments, but then forgiving the person for how they've hurt me. And I think when we do that, our hearts are open again to be able to address the issues with the people that hurt us. But if we just react in the hurt, we're going to say all kind of hurtful things or withdraw, or, you know, even our facial expressions will communicate. And it's just going to create this cycle of hurt that doesn't want. And sometimes we need to go to confession ourselves before we address these.
Yes, always good to get those graces.
Our next two most popular episodes are from the same guest, Janet Quinlan. She shared how to navigate our relationships with our in-laws, as well as how to create a bright and cheerful home. And a running theme with Janet and the conversations that we have is how our thoughts can affect a lot of what we do, whether that's, you know, our relationships with our spouse, with our in-laws, as well as just how we want to create a home and how we want to be able to provide a happy and cheerful space for our family. The conversations, I always enjoy getting to speak with her, and she really does provide some thoughtful suggestions on how to approach those needs in the family. In this particular clip, when we were discussing in-laws, we started talking about boundaries. And I think what really struck me is that sometimes we can create boundaries out of charity. And I loved what she said about, you know, boundary doesn't have to be a negative thing. It can actually be a very positive thing. And so this next clip really goes into that.
I want to go kind of back to what you were saying about boundaries. How can parents, let's say a couple, create boundaries with their in-laws, and how can the in-laws sometimes might even need to make, you know, need to make boundaries. So where would you even start with the creation of boundaries?
Yeah, the first thing I would encourage people to think is that a boundary is not something that we do to hurt someone else. Okay. It's not a reaction. A boundary protects us and what we love. So if you have a mother-in-law who comes, you know, to your house without calling you first, and she just, I mean, I have clients I have a client particularly who has a mother-in-law who comes and walks in the door. She doesn't even ring the bell. She just walks right in. And so this client of mine was saying, what do I do about that? And I said, what do you want to do about it? What is the boundary you want to have? She said, I want her to call me first and see if it's okay to come by. I said, okay. And then what? What if she still comes by? She said, well, I don't know what to do then. I said, well, you could lock your door, you know, and you can tell her, I need you to ask if you can come by. And if you come by without asking me, the door will be locked and I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to let you in. I'm busy with something else. And so we create a boundary out of love, not out of punishment. Okay. We don't want to punish the other person. We don't want to, you know, it's not retribution. It's just, this is the boundary that I want. When people come to my house, I want to know ahead of time that they're coming. And I would appreciate it if you would do that. And if you don't, just so you know, the door will be locked. From, you know, the opposite side, from a mother-in-law's perspective, she may have boundaries in, you know, the way she's spoken to. Maybe it is, or the way a spouse may speak about her son or her daughter. It may be that, you know, they, you know, talk badly, speak badly about her kids. And she may say, you know, this is not where I want to go with this. I am not willing to listen to what you have to say in your criticisms about your spouse, my child, but you should certainly talk to your spouse, you know, and move that direction that way. I think very often though, or more often than not, I should say, the boundaries are on the kids and not the mother-in-law or the father-in-law. They generally feel like there are no boundaries. And so when we get married and create our family, we have to remember that our family is first and then our extended family, which includes our parents and our in-laws. There's not, you know, there's not much difference between parents and in-laws. I think that you should have kind of an equal balance on your boundaries and your expectations of both.
It's really interesting. And it's also important, like I think you've mentioned this too, is that the boundaries are not negative necessarily. They are positive.
Yeah, they may be perceived as negative, right? So if a woman is very used to just popping in and saying, I just want to see my grandkids, just let me, you know, she may see it as a negative that you're saying, no, you can't do that anymore. Please call me and make sure that we're available. But you can't control what other people think. You can control yourself in the way you deliver the message, in the way you, you know, love them. You can still love them with lots of affection and both emotional affection and physical affection, right? In the way you speak to them, and still have a boundary. And if they don't like it, that's on them. You have to be able to say, I'm doing this for us, for our family unit, which comes first. And I will pray for her that she understands. And I will also be kind in the way I deliver it.
One of our most popular episodes is Opus Dei, A Path to Holiness. And this was an interview with J.L. Marti, and he is our CEO of the Ferris Love Podcast. It was such a joy to be able to get to speak to him about Opus Dei, to learn about what it means to sanctify your daily life and to really build a relationship with those around you and bringing them closer to Christ. One of the things that he did say, which I loved and have taken with me, even in the midst of kind of considering my own family life, it's how we can prepare our children and help our children to be open to God's will for them and to be open to discerning what their vocation may be. And so he says, you know, we have loved you a lot. His parents have loved you a lot. And I just, that line really struck me, and hope that, you know, we can also be really good for our children and love them a lot and help them to see God's will for them.
I want to go back to just what your thoughts are with your parents, because this podcast is for parents and families. And
yes,
I would love to hear what your thoughts are on just how your parents kind of laid that foundation for you to be able to consider even this being a vocation, or like to open up your heart to discerning this is an option that God, you know, might want for me.
So, you know, I've wondered about that myself, and I asked my mom, you know, because again, the fact that there's five of us and all five of us are new married in Opus Dei, and we're, like I said, we are very normal. We all thought, I mean, I've known that, you know, the man, the young man that my sister, who's the oldest, was interested in, and then the women or the young girls that my brothers have been interested in, I myself, you know, had sort of like a girlfriend and so on. So we're very normal, but we all decided to be numerous. And I think part of this, what my mom told me is, first of all, we have loved you a lot. So I think that the foundation of any parenting has to be unconditional love. You know, I'm going to love you. Try and imitate what God does for us, which is unconditional love. Then together with that, I think that I remember my dad coming from work every day and sitting down in a, and I remember the corner of the house where he would sit down and read the Bible every day, every day, you know. Maybe weekends it was different, Saturdays and Sundays, because he didn't come from work. So I don't know. I remember coming from work before dinner and reading the Bible. Then I remember my mom, for example, teaching me prayers. We would, of course, go to Mass on Sundays with them. But I remember after I made my first communion, she would teach me some prayers to say after Mass, you know, in Thanksgiving after communion. And at the beginning, she didn't do that. Like, she would say, I'm going to stay here and give thanks to God. Why don't you guys go outside and play there? In Spain, typically in front of the church, there's always a square, you know, so people, the young people can play and all that. But at one point, my mom told me, well, if you want to stay, why don't you stay and pray with me? And she showed me the prayers of the Anima Christi, or the prayer before Jesus crucified, or the self-offerings in St. Ignatius. And those were powerful prayers for me to pray when I was in my teens, you know, kind of accepting God into my life in a personal way, not just, you know, what we did as a group of people in Mass. I also remember praying the rosary when we were in the car, and we would pray the rosary, and it was funny because we would, you know, the children were in the back seat, and we would pray, and then one of us would fall asleep. And then we would elbow each other, hey, wake up. And then my mom would look back and say, no, let them sleep. They're tired. You know, they don't have to pray now. They can pray later. We'll pray for them. So that also taught me how God is, you know, that God is very loving, you know, and that he's not demanding like, no, pray now and this way and so on. But there's a lot of ways of doing things, you know, and there's a lot of ways to reach God and to pray, and he adapts to our lives. At the same time, that was a testimony that they were people of prayer.
And our most popular episode from season 5 is Decluttering Your Heart and Home with Julia Uppingay. That conversation was super fun because she had just written her book, and we were really discussing different ways that
You know, minimalism can be such a good thing in our lives. In the midst of our conversation, we talked about, you know, having a minimalistic life is good because, you know, decluttering the space that you're in can help you also declutter your mind and have it be open for other things. And so one of the things in this next clip that we discussed was like what you want to choose to fill your life with after you have kind of decluttered. And so Julia provides just a really awesome point about, you know, filling our life with good things. I'd like to touch on the faith aspect too, because you had mentioned in the midst of kind of your overwhelm, sitting and taking care of your daughter and then having those two prayers, those two Bible verses come to mind. How else has faith played a role in, like, how does it play a role in, yeah, just having this this mindset of minimalism and decluttering of both heart and home?
Yeah. So I think that with minimalism, you're looking at getting rid of things in your life, letting go of what's not important, but you still have to choose what you fill that space with. So if you're choosing it with unintentional scrolling or, you know, shopping, you're not really going to be living a more meaningful, connected, present life when you let go of your things. So faith plays an important role, because what I've found is that to fill that time, that extra space with a deeper relationship with God, with prayer, that's what leads to lasting peace. Mm-hmm. And also, I think that when you are looking at your stuff more from a faith-based perspective, you can detach from it more. And this is really important when you are decluttering and letting go of things. And, you know, in scripture, we don't see any blanket statement. It's interesting that says to follow God, you have to let go, or to follow Jesus, you have to let go of all your stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw Simon Peter did, and the rich young man was asked to. But then there's people like Lydia in the book of Acts, who she used her home and her possessions to become the first European church. Mm-hmm. So there's no blanket statement that says we have to let go of all of our stuff to follow Jesus. But there is this underlying connection that we need to give ownership to Him of all of our stuff, right? It all comes from Him anyway. So the question isn't, how do I give everything away, but how do I follow Jesus with everything? And so I realized in decluttering that I needed to detach from my stuff. I needed to give Him access to everything, my possessions, my bank account, my thought patterns. Mm-hmm. So not just what I would declutter, but also what I would keep. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it's important with detachment to realize that the things of the world are good and beautiful, but the truly good, the truly beautiful, they belong to a higher world. Mm-hmm. And so we can sense that goodness and that beauty in the worldly things, but none of them last. Mm-hmm. So I found an exercise helpful more to just think of your things as like a firework or a bubble or some other transient thing that you can observe in the moment and then let them go, because, you know, none of it's ever ours, and it wasn't ever ours in the first place, and
right.
It's all passing. And I love St. Francis of Assisi's work on this too. You know, he says, when you leave this earth, you can take nothing with you that you've received. And it's just kind of that idea that can be helpful too in decluttering.
Mm-hmm. And there you have it. Those are some of our most popular episodes on the Fearless Love podcast. If you have a recommendation for someone you'd like to hear to be interviewed, or a topic that you'd like to hear more about, please share with us those ideas at info@ferrislovefamilyproject.org. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and be sure to listen to the full episodes by following the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2025, we are continuing to share the beautiful devotion to Mary, Mother of Ferris Love, while providing practical tools and advice for parents, couples, and families. You can help us with this mission by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovefamilyproject.org.